Don't get lost in the waves of change.
190 pages, tens of hours of lawyers. One takeaway today is you now put on your listing agent hat when you meet with a buyer and you treat him the same way. So that's what you need to take away.
KGCI Real Estate On Air, keeping you informed and empowered as the NAR settlement brings seismic shifts to the real estate industry.
It's a consultation and a strategy. When you think of how people need to buy a home in this market, it takes great strategy. So why not strategize with that buyer? They need your help more than ever.
Depend on KGCI Real Estate On Air.
Welcome to the Power Unit Success Cast, the show where we push the limits to unlock our greatness. Each week, we dive into the world of real estate, business, and entrepreneurship to bring you stimulating talks, insights from movers and shakers, and the mindset to do more so we can become more. Let's get into this week's episode.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Power Unit Success Cast. If this is your first time listening, this is the show where we empower entrepreneurs. We speak with small business owners, real estate agents, entrepreneurs, and we just talk about whatever. Everything leads into the business, but, you know, we're all people at the end of the day, and so we just want to talk about what's real. And with that being said, I have one of the realest people here today. Some of you know her, but some of you may not. If you don't, you're going to get to know her by the end of this show. She has so many great things going on, and we're going to talk about all of that. But Miss Chauncey Pham is in the building.
Hi, Chasen.
Man, this has been a long time coming, though. For real, for real. This has been a long time coming. I don't know. You want to do a little introduction?
I guess. Yeah. I hate talking about myself. Yeah, it's really weird, but you know the vibe. Okay, so I'm a realtor, been licensed since 2016. I have a team of agents. Right now, the team of agents is at like 379 across 31 different states. I flip houses with my husband. We are on a television show on A&E called Zombie House Flipping. I'm now like starting to raise capital on the multifamily side. I do coaching. We do all types of things right now. And I just love life right now. Yeah. Like it's crazy where I am because this is literally what I dreamed about doing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird being in a space where you finally get there, but there doesn't feel like you thought it would necessarily feel. Yeah. But I'm there and I'm digging it.
Nice. Well, I want to talk about a lot of stuff. And y'all, I mean, you heard that list. She is the real deal. We actually met a few years ago in Puerto Rico, of all places.
Right.
And we both live here in the DFW area, but I don't know. We never really crossed paths. Yeah.
It was so weird. And we both are on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody that would watch my YouTubes, obviously you had like a much larger following. So then everyone would say, oh my gosh, I found you. Because my videos would get recommended off of your videos. Yeah. So we knew about each other, but it's crazy that we didn't meet until we were in a whole different country.
Whole different place.
But, whole different place.
You know, when we did meet, though, it felt so like natural to me,
as if
we had been knowing each other. And trust me, I haven't binged on your videos or anything like that, but so many people have, associated your name with mine, dropped your name. I know when you had the other brokerage, there was some people who worked at your brokerage and you're like, oh yeah, y'all gotta meet, y'all gotta talk. And so it's so crazy.
It's crazy. But I mean, honestly, you were a big part of, and I mean this like for real, you were a huge part of what got me started, that got me to where I am, like 110%. Like I got into the real estate space. And one day I was looking at makeup videos because I always look at makeup videos on YouTube. And I was like, these little 18-year-old girls can get all these sponsorships with this money.
Yeah.
Like, I know I can do something like this on the real estate side. So then I started going and looking for like real estate influencers, and there were none. It was just a bunch of old ass dudes like writing on whiteboards, telling you how to like cold call out a phone book. Like, it was terrible. And then I found you and I started benching your videos, and I was so excited. And I told my husband, I was like, baby, there's this one guy. And he black, and he in Dallas. His name is Chasten.
Chasten
for a good 3 years. His name is Chasten, but he does exactly what I want to do. And so seeing your videos there let me know that there was a space, and then I kind of created my version of what you've done. So you definitely like influenced me, and you definitely gave me the courage to go that direction because no one else was in that space that you were in, which is why I think people associate us, because, I mean, honestly, I got my inspiration to do what I did from you, so.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, it was
Thank
good
you.
Stuff, man.
Thank
it really
you.
Was. It changed the trajectory of my life. So,
thank you. So, let's talk about when you decided to start your journey making videos. Did you have any hesitation, or you were just like, I'm about to go do this?
I'm about to go do this. Like, I'm a doer. And I'm very ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever I get an idea, then I just like hyperfixate on it and go all in. So it was never any half stepping. Once I got the idea that I wanted to do it, then I told my husband, I just need like a camera. So he looked up the best like point and shoot vlogging cameras, got me one for Christmas. I figured out how to press record on it and set myself up with some good lighting. And I started my vlog the next day.
Yeah. So did you have a purpose for wanting to put videos out?
Yes. I wanted to use it as a lead generation mechanism to get
for
leads.
Buyers and sellers?
For buyers and sellers.
Okay.
So that was my sole reason, was to just educate buyers and sellers and then have them find me and then just use me. And they did. And that was before I even hit 1,000 subscribers. So the first year that I had my YouTube channel, I got almost $4 million in real estate sales volume, 100% from YouTube.
Wow.
And it was just people that had found me, or someone had watched it and had told their sister that needed to buy or sell. But everyone came from YouTube. And so that's how it worked. And then I figured out, okay, I can put out videos and talk about certain things and attract certain people. I can use this YouTube channel however I want and tweak it to attract whatever I need. So then when I opened a brokerage, I changed my messaging to attract agents.
Mm.
And then when I moved from having my own brokerage over to eXp Realty, I got it and attracted even more agents, attracted to the tune of like 200 of them in like 8 months.
Yeah.
And so that was just kind of my strategy with it. But I was never really technical with it. What I understood about YouTube and what I liked about your videos is that they were entertaining. And I understood that.
She's like, he a fool.
Yeah. He's funny. Oh, he talking trash.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. And if you go look at my YouTube channel, I only have 53 videos.
Mm.
I have 53 videos and like 20,000 subscribers. So nothing crazy, but my retention rate on my videos is like 9 minutes.
Wow. Which is phenomenal for YouTube. Like,
yes. And so that's what happened, is I kind of figured that out. As long as I can keep people interested in my videos to watch them long enough, I don't even have to be consistent with putting them out. People will just watch them and then they'll keep suggesting and they'll go down my rabbit hole. And that's what happened.
Yeah. I mean, YouTube is definitely an animal. Would you call yourself a quote unquote YouTuber or influencer?
No.
No. And the reason why I ask that is because a lot of times when we make videos or we put out content, people immediately start labeling you as, you know, oh, you don't sell houses, or oh, you don't do this.
They're, so?
Yeah.
I make money.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and there's adversities that come across the board. And we're going to talk about that a little bit here shortly. But as you were growing, right, did you experience criticisms? Did you experience haters?
Once or twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once or twice I've had, you know, some people say a couple of things like, well, you wouldn't understand that because like you're not a high producer.
Mm.
Like, you know, no, I'm not a high producer because I get people to produce. And then I, you know, I make my money off of that. Like I've built a house. I'm not, you know, the worker in it. Hey, I sell the shovels. I'm not digging for the gold.
Mm.
And there's a difference. And so, yeah, I definitely got the criticism there. And I would say that it also was scary for me to step out of production and stay more in this space because of that.
Yeah.
Because I was afraid. It didn't click in my brain how I could get people to listen to me and believe me that I know what I'm doing if I wasn't actively doing it. Until one day my husband said, babe, that doesn't make any sense. He was like, first of all, you sold a bunch of houses, you know, the like first 2 years or whatever that you're in the business. But he was like, most of the NFL and NBA coaches were never great players. Like they were never great players. Like he was like, think about some of the best coaches. You don't associate them with being great players. And so, and then he was like, and vice versa. A lot of great players then try to go into coaching and they're awful. It's one thing being good at production, and then it's one thing actually having the vision and being able to build something out and teach other people how to do it. So that was definitely a roadblock for me, was like, people are gonna be talking shit because I'm not actively selling, but then I'm coaching. But you can't do both well.
Right.
At the same time.
Right. But see, I think that it makes a major difference when you actually, or this is actually part of your business plan, or like part of your daily activities, weekly, whatever.
Right.
You know, most agents, when it comes to social media, they treat it like I'll get to it whenever, or like it's not that important. I remember coming up, my first brokers that I joined was Keller Williams, and KW like shoves in your head that you have to do this every day, this every day, this every day, right? Yeah. And so I was kind of trained that way to, if I want to build a business, I got to do this.
Right.
And as I was coming up on YouTube, coming up on social media, generating business, it was no longer a hobby or I'll get to it when I get to it. I'm scared. I don't know what to do. Like, it was like, okay, I'm using this to replace door knocking. Yeah. To replace door knocking because I don't want to door knock.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I feel like that's how agents need to think about it.
No, 100%. But I want to challenge you on that.
Okay.
I don't think all agents need to think about it that way because I don't think that all agents belong in front of the camera creating content.
Show don't. I mean, you know,
it doesn't matter how much coaching they pay for. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how consistent they are. Like, I see people that have YouTube channels and they are wildly consistent, like clockwork. They just can't get views. They just can't get because they just are not interesting. They are not a person of interest. They just don't have that oomph. So I would say, you know, content creation is great and can be a wonderful tool if you find that you have a passion for it and you're creative and you love it and you can actually get good at it. And if you can't, then just go find what you're good at. Because I'm not a door knocker. That's not my jam.
Yep. I don't like
it. I'm not cold calling you. That ain't me.
I'll do that. But yeah, I ain't knocking no doors.
No, it's just certain things that I'm not going to do. And so I understand my lane. And I really wish that in real estate, we would stop painting with a broad brush and saying, this is what everyone needs to do. Because in all actuality, we need to figure out what our strengths are and leverage.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that you said that because as I started taking YouTube more seriously and videos, I realized that there were certain skills that I didn't have at the time. And they had nothing to do with the platform. Like we could say, oh, I don't know SEO and keywords and all that. That's fine. But one of those skills was for me, I didn't know how to tell a story. Right.
Mm.
When we talk about keeping someone's attention. Yeah, I feel like I have a great personality. Everybody likes me. I'm bubbly. But when it's on video, how do you keep someone's attention? So storytelling, that was something that I had to learn. I had to learn a different charisma because I'm a very introverted person.
You are.
Oh, yeah.
When I first met you in person, that's the first thing that threw me off. Like,
yeah,
you're introverted, but then you're also like really funny, sarcastic, like under the breath. You throw shade. Yeah.
But like, I would literally just like be good just sitting in the corner, yeah, sitting by myself. So like, I had to learn a charisma, like how to be charismatic and, you know, welcome to my, you know, so those were all things that I said, hey, this is important if I'm going to go down this road.
Yeah.
And it's not always about, do I know how to use YouTube or I don't have a camera.
Right.
It's about like, can you even present yourself through video?
100%. And that is something that there's not a lot of training on. And that's my jam.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the opposite of you. So I feel like you did really well on kind of having the will and like being consistent and understanding
the technical side.
Yeah. And then I had the skill, just the natural skill, because I'm a trained orator. Like I went to college on a debate and oratory scholarship. Like that is what I have done forever. Good. And so it was easy for me to just turn on the camera and be like, okay, this is what I need to do. I understand voice inflection. I understand those things. But a lot of agents need help with that. Or just entrepreneurs in general need help with understanding what you just said. How do I tell a story effectively? How do I keep people's attention? How do I make freaking eye contact with people? That's very difficult. So I actually have a membership, shameless plug, video plug for that.
Oh, yeah.
Where we teach agents how to do that. And it's pretty effective. Because we actually have like acting coaches and things like that will come in and because it's a skill.
It is.
A lot of people don't understand that it's actually a skill. And so that's super important. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. And my team gets on me literally every day. I've recorded so many videos that I haven't even released. Because they get on me and they be like, that ain't even seem natural. And stop trying to script stuff, you know, and I'm just like, okay, whatever. Side note.
Mm-hmm.
I was in debate too. Not college, but back in middle school, high school.
Were you Cross X or Lincoln Douglas?
LD.
See, that's some geeky shit right there.
LD.
Only us debaters understand. So I was a Cross X girl.
Okay.
I was a Cross X girlie. Yeah. I did Lincoln Douglas for UIL like 1 year in high school, but everything else I did Cross X. We won state.
We probably might have been at a competition.
We probably were.
Before. I remember we used to go to them competitions. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've been in like random places like Bryan.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Chauncey, we might have been there.
Yeah, Will and all of our things behind us. But I will tell you this. Being in debate single-handedly helped me become a better salesperson. And here's why. When you're in debate in high school and in college, and what a lot of people don't know is you're given a statement at like the beginning of the school year. And then you just have to do all of this research for the negative and for the affirmative. So arguing for and against that statement. And then when you go to these competitions, you learn typically at that moment or maybe the day before which side you're arguing. Mm-hmm. So it teaches you how to understand everything from both sides,
yep,
and how to simultaneously think about the arguments of both sides, like at the same time. And so that helped me so much in sales, because instead of just like trying to push my agenda, I'm constantly thinking about the person that I'm talking to, kind of what they're thinking, the angle that they may be coming from, so that I can then kind of manipulate that outcome.
You know what, David, I never attributed or thought about,
yeah, it's debate,
my sales skills having that debate background.
Yeah.
And what Chauncey's saying is completely mm-hmm. correct. And at these competitions, like when you actually like went around and you're moving up and moving up, mm-hmm. you find out like minutes before, right? Mm-hmm. They'll release that manila envelope and, mm-hmm. and your coach will tell you which side you're on. But another thing that it really taught me too was how to listen.
Oh,
because
yeah.
you gotta listen to your opponent,
yep,
because you want to be able to like pick out a single line that they said
and then hammer in on it.
Yes, it really taught you that.
Let me tell you something. That has caused a problem in my marriage.
Oh no!
Because when me and my husband are arguing, then I will take one sentence to be said in an argument.
You previously mentioned that. Yeah.
And he always gets so mad. Like, why are you focused on that one sentence? I said like a whole thing. That's all you're talking about.
Right.
So yeah, it also can cause marital problems. Thank mm-hmm. you, debate.
You'd be like, I haven't got to that other one yet. It's on my list.
So that was how I learned
what a legal pad was, by the way. I didn't know what a legal pad was. We had our yellow pads.
Yeah, it was to argue. But I love debate. I absolutely loved it. And so, yeah, it brought me kind of where I am now. So sales, content creation, you know, oratory skills, it all kind of rolls in one. And it's kind of crazy to just like think about all the shit that you've done in life that's led up to now, mm-hmm. and then understand how it all happened for a reason, mm-hmm. and fit in the puzzle, because every single thing, it makes sense. It got us where we are.
Yes. So let's talk about that a little bit. So we talked about content. You're putting yourself out there. Mm-hmm. You said earlier, you're on a TV show.
Oh.
A&E. Zombie House Flipping. Definitely watch it. But do you feel like your content led you to that?
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
So what ended up happening was, I told you I decided I'm going to start a YouTube channel. My husband bought me a camera. I put out my video starting January of 2018. I think my first video is January, February. April, I got a freaking email from a producer. He slid in my DMs. I thought that it was just some creepy dude trying to holler at me. I ignored him. He was pretty persistent, ended up calling me. We talked. He was a real television producer. He found my YouTube channel, thought that I would be great talent for a show, but his production company did not have a show. So they sent somebody out. They created a sizzle reel. I signed a contract with them. And this was literally like 3 months after I started my YouTube channel. Long story short, nothing came of it because they couldn't come up with a good proof of concept to pitch to a show or to a network that a network wanted to buy. That contract fizzled out. Then it happened again, maybe 6 months later. Signed on with another company. That fizzled out. And then finally, in November of 2021, the casting director for the production company that I work for now found me again on social media, reached out. I ignored him because I was like, I've done this twice. I'm not doing mm-hmm. this again. And then once I finally talked to him, he was like, oh, no, this is an established show. It's been on 4 seasons. You would just be on the 5th season. They're expanding the franchise. And then it was go time. So social media 100% got me everywhere that I am, from getting leads from buyers and sellers when I was a new agent, to then getting agents at my brokerage, which then led other agents to noticing what I was doing, which led me to go to EXP so that I could capitalize on all of that attention, mm-hmm. to then building up a team of 300 and however many agents that I have at EXP. Right. At this point, most of them came from YouTube, to then now having my own show. And most of our leads that we get in our flipping business come from YouTube, or the agents that I got from YouTube.
That's awesome. And I want to get back to the show in just a second, but mm-hmm. did I tell you, so I've been down that road a couple times.
Oh, really?
Too. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, like, we got pretty far on our show, like ordering the pilot, actually signing the contracts with the network. I actually got the lawyers involved and everything. You mm-hmm. know, we were dealing with the production company and mm-hmm. then the actual network. Excuse me. And then it just didn't get green lit.
Yeah.
Over a show with a celebrity, right? Because this was going to be a more dramatic type of real estate show.
Okay.
But over a celebrity, and it sucks because they only lasted like 1 season. But I started to notice after that, that was probably in 2017-ish. Mm-hmm. Every year around January, February, you know, everybody starts reaching out and mm-hmm. reaching out. And I didn't know that, well, I guess I kind of knew, but the contract that I had signed with the big company kept me from doing it for 6 years.
Six?
6 years. Okay. Now, this company is a big company, and so they've been pimping me out for other little small projects, but every time I was about to start the interview process, or I just do the interview, you know, the little Skype interview, mm-hmm. just to get it going. But once we get, like, to moving forward, I got to disclose this, and then it just shuts
yeah,
everything.
They won't talk anymore.
Yeah, yeah, it just shuts everything down. But that was the first time that I really saw how this industry works, like on the front end. I mean, and I didn't get as far as you, but even those, how many episodes did we do? Like 4 or 5 episodes? Because if it did get greenlit, they wanted it out immediately.
Right.
And so they paid me my little $500 an episode because that's all it was.
Yeah.
But it really showed me a different side of things. And with that, I realized that this is not so far out of reach as people think it is, right?
No, it's
like
not.
It's not. But like we were talking about with video, you gotta have that personality. You gotta have charisma. You gotta actually want it. So going back to you, you got on the show. Mm-hmm. Well, you're on the show. Mm-hmm. How has life changed? Let's start there.
I will say the TV industry is wild.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild. And they gonna see about me. They gonna hear about me when I am no longer in the capacity.
They not your
right
friends,
now.
Chauncey.
They are not your friends.
They act like they are. They
friends. They know. Oh, we are not friends. They understand that we're not friends.
See, I was mistaken. I thought y'all was friends with me.
Oh, I am their worst fucking nightmare.
Oh gosh.
Okay. I am a wild beast. Okay. So it has changed, in a way because I'm an entrepreneur. I run my own things. I run my own brain. I was making money before I got on television. So I will say the toughest part for me is that a lot of people that get on TV, that is their end game. Mm. That is what they have been working for. And they're like, I made it. Being on TV for me, that's just icing on top of the cake. That's like another top of funnel mechanism for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to be on TV to make money. I'm making money without TV. Actually, I make less money once I first started doing TV because it was sucking up all my time and not allowing me to do what actually was putting money in my pocket, because you don't get paid a whole lot to be on TV.
Oh, yeah,
and that's what a lot of people don't understand. And they will allow for you to make dumb ass financial decisions so that they can create their end product and ultimately like exploit you if you're not like advocating for yourself.
Oh, that contract, since you mentioned it, that contract was
it's
brutal.
Wild.
Like, you're not even a person after you sign that contract.
No.
You are talent.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
talent.
Just brutal. Anyways.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It's wild. So I would say, you know, now that we've been filming now for over a year. We started last June, I think like June 20th or so last year, and then we'll end at the end of this year, like through December. So December 31st. And then we'll finish our, you know, official first season. And then I guess we would find out a couple of months later if we're going to get picked up for another season. And so we have it down now, but it was really tough in the beginning. Mm. Just the scheduling, the demand of it. I didn't realize it was going to take so much time. People trying to tell me what to do. And I'm like, you're not telling me what to do. Like, you know, your show depends on me going and spending my money, but you trying to tell me I got to spend my money, but it's my that's not going to work. So that was an issue. But I would say the biggest change is I've always been on social media. I've been on Instagram. I've been on YouTube. But being thrown on a television show on a network that gets over 600,000 viewers just on TV, let alone the streams, as soon as the second episode came out, I was inundated with so much negativity that I literally like went into recluse mode. Like, I got depressed, and I've never been depressed in my life, but I like went home, closed the blinds, stayed under the covers, didn't get out of bed for like 2 weeks.
And that's
interesting, harassed.
Though. I mean, because you're on a real estate show.
It's about house flipping.
Like, house flipping. Like, you're not on Bad Girls Club.
So I'll tell you what the issue was. So the show that I'm on, the base audience, I think it is an older demographic, and the cast that was previously on, that's who they were used to for 4 years. Like, that's who they liked. And then, you know, no one told them that, hey, all of these new people are about to be on. So the audience was honestly very confused, I think, when we hopped on. And so because they were so confused and I'm mouthy, it now has a black woman in the forefront.
That'll do it.
That's talking trash. That's loud. Yeah. I got a tatted up husband. Mm. Our style was just very different than I think what the audience was used to. And so I got inundated with so much black fat bitch stuff. Like, no one really criticized my personality. They didn't really criticize the design or the work, which you would think people would criticize on a house flipping show. Everything was very personal about me. My husband wasn't attacked like that.
Really?
We had our general contractor on there. He wasn't attacked like that. You know, our stager, you know, designer, she didn't get attacked like that. So it was just very personal attacks. And when I say I was getting probably 15, 20 emails per day, these people were taking the time to watch the show and look me up and finding my email address and sending me emails. And because I'm a realtor, my phone number is everywhere. I was getting text messages. I was getting phone calls in the middle of the night where I'd answer the phone and they'd be like, fat black bitch, you don't deserve to be on TV. And then just hang up. Wow. It was wild. And I was like, I know I'm curvy, but like, yeah. Damn. Like, y'all ain't never seen a... Like, stop. What?
You were...
It's wild. Like, it was wild. So that was the hardest part. And now, though, you know, after I got over the initial shock, then I was like, oh, okay. So now I can just make fun of these people. Like, I literally have t-shirts with some of the things that they said printed on them. So, you know, like this, you know, I have one in particular that's like, she's too mouthy. And then like the t-shirt literally says she's too mouthy. And then it's like, Pam from Facebook. Like, just.
Wait, can people buy these shirts? Or?
So I will be putting them
okay,
out.
Okay,
yes,
okay.
Because they are hilarious.
Be
but
sure
they are,
to follow her to see when that link drops.
But they are real sayings from Facebook comments and emails and things like that that I've gotten from people. So, I mean, you have to take the negative and just learn how to flip it. But it has been a wild ride.
But wait, so how did you deal with that at the beginning? Because I'm sure you were even trying to bring your best foot forward. I mean,
oh, yeah.
This was a new lane for y'all. Like,
yeah,
you want to present a good product. Like, how did you deal with that? Or what did you do with that? Like, did you talk to somebody? I mean, you just...
I did. I talked to a couple of other people that have been on television shows and have, like, large followings and stuff. And they all went through the same exact thing. And you just have to learn to tune it out. I mean, eventually it just becomes white noise.
Right.
It's just the initial shock of it that freaks you out. And, like, let's be honest. I have created a bubble around myself. And I think we all do, right? Mm-hmm. That's like a little echo chamber. All of my friends are entrepreneurs. We are all from different walks of life. It's very diverse. We got gay. We got straight. We got black. We got white. We have mixed couples everywhere. I'm in an interracial marriage. I got little mixed kids. So forgetting sometimes that there is a weird underbelly of people out there that just have nothing else to do but just be evil. You forget about that when you've created a life that is what you want. And so honestly, it just kind of woke me up to the fact that that's still there. And now it don't bother me at all.
When it comes to criticism, something that I always say is all criticism is incredible, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And most times when someone has something to say, it's not like I am looking at a mirror. I'm looking at a window, right?
Ooh.
I'm not looking back at myself, you know, starting to think that stuff about myself. I'm looking through that window saying, this is them.
That.
Where are they coming from? Are they coming from a place of hate, from a place of pain? Are they coming from a place of love? Are they coming from a place of experience? If so, I could probably learn something.
Right.
Right.
I love
but
that.
Even with my audience and the stuff that I get that some people wouldn't even believe what slides in those DMs, it's kind of like, bro, who are you?
Who
and
are you?
Where is your profile picture? You know, like what?
Why is a bowl of spaghetti your profile picture?
Yeah. Yeah. And at the beginning, it would get to me because I felt like it got to a point where I was doing this to make people like me and, mm-hmm. I hope nobody, you know, hates me and stuff like that. And then as I started being my authentic self and really tuning it out, and by tuning out, I mean literally not reading the DMs,
mm-hmm.
it made me realize how small those people are.
Oh, absolutely. But I will also go out on a limb and say this, that seeing people in content and on TV and online, it has created just through our screens this barrier of humanism, right? Like we don't realize that the other person is a human, because I have fallen victim to it before, even with you. And we've had this conversation. When I first met you and I used to follow you, you were my arch nemesis in my head. Mm. I didn't even know you. You didn't know me.
Right.
But I was like, I bet he don't even sell no house. you know, that's just, yeah. we forget that these are like actual real people on the other side. And so it's, there's something to be said about, and I think that's why I try to be so real with people, to let them know that like, I'm a real freaking person. I'm not just some chick online that flips houses. Like, I'm a mom, you know, I'm a wife. I have issues just like everyone else does. To just try to bring a human element in it, because we have just been so desensitized,
yeah.
To having any type of empathy toward each other and realizing that like the people you see are real people with real lives. So, you know, I just try to be mindful, and I hope I can teach a lesson to people about that.
Well, I'm a piggyback on that lesson. So what she just said about what she thought of me, I told y'all earlier, the first time we met was in Puerto Rico, and of course I knew who she was. I was like, oh, this is such a great opportunity. And one of the first things that you said to me was literally just that. And you said, I want to apologize because I thought this and thought this and thought this. And I'm sitting there thinking in my head, like, you did? But then I wasn't mad.
Right.
Because, you know, it's like, you're not the first person to think that. Yeah. But I was so relieved. I was like, you didn't even have to tell me that.
Right.
But the fact that you did relieved me so much, because it kind of took down, like, oh my gosh, I'm so nervous meeting Chauncey. You
that's
you,
so yeah. wild.
Look, it took that guard down, but then it also showed me what kind of person you were. Because again, I hadn't really watched your videos. A lot of what I knew from you was from other people. And it's like, from these other people, one week they love you, one week they hate you. But anyways, I'm not that kind of person to make that type of conclusion, you know? And so I didn't know what to expect.
Right.
But it was such a relief. And from that moment on, I was like, I mean, I want to stay knowing you. And I'll even say this, since you've even had the TV show, and this is how I know you are so real and so authentic, right? Since you have had the TV show, we've still been able to have regular conversations. You're sitting here in this podcast. She's spoken at my event. Like, you're running a true business. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this is your brand. This is you. And to the point where you're so authentic, where you're like, tell me how you're doing this. Tell me how you do this. And I'm like, you got a whole show. How you don't not do it? You tell me. Like, you know, but that just shows,
yeah.
like this is real life.
This is
you're
real
a real
life.
Person.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I will never betray myself, and I will never, I won't ever walk away from that. And I will always own up to my mistakes. And like, I think that is a very important part of our character. So when I met you, because I had worked myself up in my brain and you were my competition, and it was just, I wouldn't feel right having a conversation with you without apologizing to you for the shit that I had in my brain. And I wish everybody would operate that way.
I know.
I'm going to do that to everybody. That's just who I am.
Yep.
It would change it up.
It would change it up. Yes. So thank you for that. All right. So you've built a really great brand, and I love your brand. Even when your assistant sent me your speaking packet, mm-hmm. I was like, ooh, this is nice. Like, David, literally, didn't I say, hey, I got to make something like this, you know, just with all the information in there. Yeah. And so you have a legit solid brand, mm-hmm. and you also teach other agents, you know, how to,
Lord, I try.
Yeah. Yeah. But so when it comes to your brand, mm-hmm. monetizing, paying for your time, getting that reach, getting the word out, how do you feel about people who approach you to get help? Like, how do you decide, like, whether this person's real, whether they're not, are they realistic, not realistic, and if they're trying to get help for the right reasons?
Ooh. I would say that up until probably the last year, I just freely gave my time to everyone.
Mm.
And it drained the life out of me. But I'm a yes person. I hate saying no. Funny story. I have never broken up with somebody in my life.
Really?
I hate delivering bad news. I've never. When I was in college, I have a boyfriend. And then if I didn't like you anymore, then I just stop answering your phone calls and you see me on campus with my new man. Like,
quiet quitting. Yeah.
That's just what it was. And so I always had a hard time getting into real estate, like saying no to people. But now I the way that I determine is I have to make people make an investment in themselves before I make that investment. That's how I know if it's real. And that can be a time investment or a money investment. But I almost have like a little litmus test that when people come to me for help, that you've got to do X, Y, and Z. And then once you do X, Y, and Z, then we can take it to the next level. 95% of people never do X, Y, and Z.
You know, what's so crazy, I remember our last conversation, we were on the phone and you were telling me about the experience that you and your husband have created for agents. And I'll let you like give all the details, but you told me the price and I had to pull over. I said, Chauncey, you need to charge way more for that. And she's like, well, I want to. And I'm like, seriously? but you know, like, I get it. I get it because I was in that place too. But how I look at you, I'm like, okay, extremely credible, extremely knowledgeable, very well branded. You got your stuff. Like, how do you decide what someone pays for something or what the price is?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. I think I am led by accessibility.
Okay.
I'm led by accessibility and I probably shouldn't be, because then that allows people that shouldn't have access to have access. But I just remember being new in the business and wanting to do so many things and dibble and dabble and touch so many things. And I couldn't, because everything was just so expensive. And it didn't mean that I wasn't worthy because I couldn't afford it in the moment. It just meant I don't have the damn money.
Yeah.
So I focus on trying to provide as much value as I can in a way that's accessible to people that at least put in some sort of effort to be able to afford it, instead of my time is more valuable than your worth.
Oh. Dang.
And I think that a lot of entrepreneurs lead that way.
Yeah.
I'm worth $2,000 an hour. Like,
yeah.
I mean, are you really?
yeah. No, I get it.
But is your time, you know, more valuable, like I said, than someone else's worth? So if I can put out a litmus test and I can have you do X, Y, and Z, and then you actually prove that you do those things, then I want to give you access to what I have. So my pricing, I always try to consider that. It's definitely got to be enough that I'm being compensated fairly, of what I feel like is fair, but I really try to be fair so that folks that want to put in a little bit of work can get it.
Nice. For me, how I came up with the pricing for my stuff was literally out of accessibility, supply and demand, this type of thing, because I'm a giver. Like, I give everything. As a matter of fact, my team tells me, like, Your free content, you not only telling them what to do, but you telling them how to do it too. Like, what's, you know, why would they even want to? But when I first started coaching, I was doing one-on-one and I was charging $500 a month. Like, literally $500.
Oh, damn, for one-on-one coaching?
A month.
Child.
Right? And I was getting a lot of people. So then I was like, okay, well, I'm going to start group coaching. So I started that, $97 a month. And every single week you get to have group coaching, okay. You know, I thought that was the next step up, because I was thinking like, okay, what would make sense money wise, right? Now I will say that we are far from that, but every time I have increased the price, it's because I've been stretched too thin.
You're stretched too thin. And now you've got to pay for resources and things like that. And I run a very lean business. Mm. I do not have a lot of staff, or everything that I do is a very lean. We have very high profit margins because we just don't have a lot of expenses. And so I can also, that's another reason why my pricing can be accessible, because I had that conversation with my husband, like, how much money do we really want? Like what type of life do we want to have? Like, at what point is it enough? And we have that number. And once I hit that number, like, I'm good.
Yeah.
If I can go to Mexico, go down to Panama once a month or something if I want, I'm good. Yeah. Like, I don't, so I'm not really at this point in my life into the scaling and all of that. And so I really want to make everything that I do accessible for people, touch as many people as I can. And then I think through doing that, I'll continue to get my blessings.
That's awesome. And I'm trying to partner with her, y'all, to bring our programs together so that you could just have it all in one. But anyways, I want you to, and with this, do not tell the price, because I'm going to make everyone guess in the comments. But tell everybody about this new experience, because it's pretty legit.
Mm-hmm.
But don't tell the price, please. Okay. Please.
So it's called Flipside Immersive.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, it started out as just Flipside. So Flipside was our once per week, 2.5 hour Anyone can pay and just come for 2.5 hours to our actual locations of our projects and just ask whatever questions that they wanted. But then I started getting people from out of state and that weren't in Dallas-Fort Worth that wanted to do it. So now we have a week long. So for 5 days, Monday through Friday, you can come here and you're with us for 6 to 8 hours a day, Monday through Friday. We take care of your boarding, so your lodging. You have to pay for your own food and travel here, but you come for 6 to 8 hours a day with us on set. You come with us to every house and do all of our site visits. You get full access to our construction manager, to our project manager, to our design process, to all of our systems, to our lead generation, to everything, so that when you leave, you literally have a ready-made, hands-on business that you've worked in for the last week. For a 7-figure flipping business.
Amazing. Is it launched yet?
Yes.
Okay.
It is launched.
Since it is launched.
And we already have our first two in.
So since it's launched, we'll put the link down in the show notes and in the description. Okay. And just know, I think that the price is way too low for all that.
I don't even remember what price I told you because that was before I launched. So I may have increased the price.
How many? Mm-mm, you can tell me that.
Yeah, that's where I am now.
Oh, okay. Well, good job on that one. No, like, yeah, I mean, and for that type of hands-on, I mean, you know, here's what I believe about pricing. Okay, someone who invests in that type of experience or invests in any coaching, their quickest thing that they're trying to do is make their money back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Make their money back. And when that's your goal, like, I just maxed out a credit card to be here. I got to pay this shit off by next month. You know, you have a different type of fire behind you. Yep. Because I've done it. I mean, I've invested $15,000 into a program and that's not the price of hers.
I'm cheap.
You know, I know, me too. But I literally felt like, okay, this has to work and it's going to be the end all be all. Check this. I made my $15,000 back within the first 30 days of that. Right. But I had to.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like any information, whether you feel like it's basic or you already knew that, you're going to run with it differently.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. You have to.
And that's the big reason why I charge what I do. And you can ask my staff. I pay all of my expenses with my investments, with my real estate income, my revenue share. When it comes to these courses and stuff, it's for the staff, it's for the community, it's for the experiences. Like, that's where that money is, right? But something different happens. Like, even my apprentices right now, they've invested and they work hard and they get quick wins. They get these wins quickly because
people have to invest time or money. If they don't invest time or money, they're not going to work for it.
Exactly. And there's an incredible amount of free information out there,
yeah,
right? But it's like, what are you paying for? Are you paying for ease of access?
Well, so what my motto has been lately, and I think this is also kind of how I'm building out my business models, is give away the process and the system, sell the implementation. Because what I've been noticing is people gobble up courses and do all of that. You know what? Fine. I won't charge you that much. I'll make that part accessible. But then what I am going to text your ass on is the implementation, because I know you're not actually going to do anything with it. And so that's kind of the model of what we're building out, is, you know, really making people kind of pay for the implementation part of the processes and systems that we're sharing at the more affordable.
You know what sucks for me is I actually get emotional about my courses a little bit when someone buys it, but they don't
do anything with it.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and it's and I think for other people out there selling it, selling stuff, they're probably like,
well, that's because you put time into it.
Yeah. And I know that it works. And I'm like, oh, please just do it. You know, like, you spent the money.
They're not going to.
Right. That actually, like, gets to me little bit.
They're not going to. And so that's fine. So I'll make that accessible for you. And then here is my actual upsell. This is the real offer, which is the implementation of.
Yeah. So what's next as far as you got this, you got a. And I'm not even calling it a course. Y'all notice I keep saying experience.
Yeah, it is.
You got this experience going. You have the TV show going. You have you have a team across the country, right, of agents.
Mm-hmm.
Are there still other things that you feel like you haven't done yet that you want to do?
No, there aren't. But I definitely think moving forward, My space is going to be in the TV world in a different capacity.
Yeah.
Television is content creation. That's all it is. Making TV is making content, and that's what we're good at. And so I definitely think I'll probably live in that world in that capacity, at some point in the near future. And then events. Those are the two things that I really want to spend my time doing. So, like, really putting on, like, large-scale events that are valuable and are almost, like, immersive experiences, like, you know, what I was talking to you about. So I think those are really the only two things that I want to do. And I just want to, like, go and chill and live my life on the beach.
Yeah.
Like, I value my time right now more than, like, money-wise, I made a lot of money. And yeah. I made the money that I'm happy financially with where I am. And, you know, I can always take more, but I'm happy here, and I really want to spend time with my kids. And that's the one thing that I know I can't buy more of. I can't get more time by, you know, making more things and just, you know, wasting my time to go make money. So, I'm really focused on that part.
I'm so glad that you said that, because it's pretty similar for me. And I've said this before, like, I don't know what's next for me, because everything that I planned, I hit.
You did.
Right? And it happened quicker than I thought it would. You know how they say, like, oh, set ridiculous goals and that. Yeah. I'm that person that if I set a ridiculous goal, it's going to happen, you know.
Yeah,
so now it's more so where life leads, you know. I can say I'm happy. I've accomplished more than I thought.
Same.
You know, I mean, I sound like I'm somebody who's about to have a funeral next week. But I lived a full life. You know,
but I'm with you.
Yeah.
I totally feel that. Like, if I didn't do anything else and my life stayed exactly the way it is, I'm fine with that. Like, I just feel like I'm really tired of the hustle culture and the more. At this point, the only thing I want more of is time to spend the way that I want to spend it. And so, you know, I've established myself financially to where I can buy the amount of time that I want, and I'm going to use it how I want to use it.
Amazing. Well, I appreciate you for being here and being so open and sharing. Y'all, we done had a good time over here. Like,
what's in that cup?
What you mean, what's in this cup? Some water? H2O?
Not no water.
But yeah, Chauncey, I appreciate you. And we'll add all her links below and stuff. Be sure to watch her show and send some love, because all them people, forward me the email. I'll take it. Just forward me the emails, okay?
I will.
Until next time, y'all.
This is going to be the largest transfer of market share we've ever seen between agents in history.
KGCI Real Estate on Air, keeping you informed and empowered as the NAR settlement brings seismic shifts to the real estate industry.
You treat your buyers just like you do a seller. You get a consultation. You pitch and you compete for the value you will deliver for the fee you're willing to accept.
Stay informed, stay prepared. Depend on KGCI, Real Estate on Air.